we are seeing a Chinese government which is much more assertive, if not outright aggressive, in its approach.
Beijing is upset about a visit to Taiwan. It's Monday, September 7th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Follow us as well on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, India deals with one of the world's largest coronavirus outbreaks, Trump voting controversy, NBA lures voters, closing shop in New York, and connecting students. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A bitter dispute between China and the Czech Republic threatens to affect relations between Europe and Beijing. A delegation from the Czech Senate visited Taiwan this past week, which China claims as part of its territory. Strongly worded threats from Beijing against the delegation have prompted criticism from EU leaders. As Henry Ridgewell reports, the dispute comes as Europe hardens its language toward China.
Ja sem Taiwanec. Wash.
I am a Taiwanese, the words spoken in Czech and Mandarin to Taiwan's parliament by the president of the Czech Senate this week. His delegation was warmly welcomed by Taiwan's president.
Our actions are telling friends in Europe and all over the world, whether Taiwanese or Czechs, we will not succumb to oppression. We will bravely speak up, actively participate in international affairs, and contribute with our capabilities.
Beijing has reacted to the visit with fury.
We hope that the Czech side will recognize the serious damage caused by the Senate President's actions to Sino-Czech relations. Their actions will not change in the slightest the fact that Taiwan is an inalienable part of Chinese territory.
While in Europe this week, China's top diplomat Wang Yi warned that the Czech Senate president would pay a heavy price. His comments drew widespread European condemnation, note analysts.
We are seeing a Chinese government which is much more assertive, if not outright aggressive, in its approach, and that is changing opinions in Europe.
The Czech population is especially sensitive to threats from a foreign power, says China analyst Filip Jeruš.
It's sort of part of the Czech historical narrative that it was always like this foreign power that was sort of dictating what we do. It was either Germany or it was Russia in the past, and now you have China.
Relations weren't always bad. In 2015, the Czech Republic welcomed Chinese President Xi Jinping to Prague with a pledge that the country would become the gateway for Chinese investment in Europe.
The economic side of things that were promised never came. And in the end, I would say lots of people below the top tier of politics sort of felt uncomfortable with what was happening here.
Opinion surveys show the Czech public has swung against China, fueled by a series of scandals, including secret payments made by the Chinese government to staff at Prague's Charles University. Europe is also hardening its language. EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell described China in a recent newspaper article as a new empire that was undermining international norms.
There is a general hardening of attitudes within the EU towards China, and that hardening is primarily a response to the wolf warrior diplomacy of China, whether it is pitched against the COVID-19 crisis or because of events in Hong Kong or in Xinjiang or Tibet or the Sino-Indian borders and South China Sea.
Embroiled in a bitter trade war with the United States, analysts say China is reluctant to sour relations with Europe. But Taiwanese independence touches the rawest of nerves in Beijing, and there could yet be further fallout from the visit by the Czech delegation. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Lockdown extended as Australia's second biggest city battles second COVID-19 wave. North Korea's Kim orders thousands to help typhoon recovery. Reusable experimental Chinese spacecraft has returned successfully to Earth. Taliban named Cleric as chief negotiator for Afghan peace talks. World's loneliest elephant okay to leave zoo for new life. There's expanded coverage for all these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia. Please also stop by our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. India, one of the largest COVID-19 epicenters, is adding new cases at the world's fastest rate. Even as it approaches the 4 million mark, authorities are opening the economy as they focus on mitigating the devastating impact of the pandemic on millions of people. Anjana Pasricha visited a weekly market in the Indian capital that has allowed cities' pavement markets to reopen.
Hawking items like belts, utensils and clothes, these vendors are impatient to resume business at this weekly street market after 5 months. However, the pre-pandemic crowds of bargain hunters are missing.
I used to make about $2 to $5 daily. I have not even sold a single item so far. For 2 hours I have not seen a customer.
These vendors carry their wares to pavement markets held across the city. But shoppers are wary as cases of coronavirus surge in Delhi.
It does not seem anyone will come. By this time earlier, there used to be a huge rush. Now there is nobody.
The pandemic is raging in India. It recorded 2 million infections in August, the world's highest. However, cities such as Delhi are lifting restrictions swiftly to restore lost livelihoods amid mounting concerns about long-term health risks due to the devastating loss of incomes.
There are huge consequences, storms of nutrition among children. Immunization services are disrupted. And these things are likely to have impact down the line, 2-3 years down the line, or maybe even longer.
The government has been giving free cereals and lentils to poor people. It helped, but with incomes gone, it was not enough for many.
It was difficult to buy vegetables and milk. I hope I can buy these for my children now.
The struggle to buy enough food is uppermost in the mind of Mohammed Shehzan, whose family had to cut back on portions.
I'm scared of contracting coronavirus, but I must work to survive because even if the virus doesn't catch us, we could die of hunger.
Authorities are taking precautions. This van stands ready to conduct tests. Stalls are set at a distance. Repeated announcements emphasize safety.
Hand sanitizing machines are also put in.
We have put sanitizing machines. All stalls have sanitizer, and we give masks to whoever doesn't have one.
But hope is turning to despondency. After setting up this stall, Hari Gobind Singh planned to recall his extended family, who left for the village when he had no income. Now, he is not so sure.
I'm not sure if this work can continue. We made good money earlier and could run our households easily. Two of us support 20. But only I know now how we are coping now.
The economic scars of the pandemic will not disappear anytime soon, despite reopening cities on which many depend for their livelihoods. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Happening now in Asia, at least 90 people were arrested in Hong Kong Sunday during protests against the postponement of legislative elections. The elections are one of the few times Hong Kong residents get to cast ballots. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. President Donald Trump created controversy last week by appearing to urge his supporters to vote twice, through the mail and in person, to test the election system and ensure that their votes count. Voting more than once is illegal, and the president's comments have been slammed by critics, including Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker Sawara has the story from Biden's home state of Delaware.
Trump supporters were energized during a rally in Wilmington, North Carolina, where President Donald Trump appeared to make a controversial suggestion to vote by mail and then go to a polling station and possibly vote again.
And if on election day or early voting that is not tabulated and counted, you go vote. And then if for some reason after that, it shouldn't take that long, it comes in, they're not going to be able to tabulate it because you will have voted. But you have to make sure your vote counts.
Trump, who has previously said voting by mail leads to voter fraud, reiterated his message via a series of tweets, which Twitter has labeled as violating its civic integrity policy for encouraging people to potentially vote twice. Voting more than once is illegal in the U.S. Most states are encouraging voting by mail as a safe and secure method during the pandemic. Trump's remark was condemned by critics, including Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden, who accused Trump of undermining the American election system.
I think it's all designed to create so much chaos that no matter what the outcome of the election is, that is thrown up in the air. I mean, that must be his reason because, I mean, he says and does things that no other president that I'm aware of in American history has ever done. And we all go, well, there's another ridiculous, illegal, inappropriate thing he said.
White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany defended Trump's statement.
The president wants enfranchisement, not disenfranchisement. That's his goal with the comments that he made.
But election officials and analysts are concerned about the potential impact on polling stations.
I think what the president and what the press secretary are missing is the chaos that a significant number of people who have already cast their absentee ballots showing up at the polling place will mean, because the polling places themselves are not set up to handle, you know, a significant influx of provisional ballots. What it yields is a longer process for check-in, which means longer lines, and those individuals aren't going to get the information they wanted anyway.
Facebook said it would take down posts containing video of Trump's remarks on voting twice unless the posts correct the record about voter fraud. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara, VOA News.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Satellite imagery of a North Korean shipyard shows activity suggestive of preparations for a test of a medium-range submarine-launched ballistic missile. The Center for Strategic and International Studies said the images showed several vessels similar to a previous submersible test. More on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. About 20 U.S. professional basketball teams will be converting their venues into pandemic-safe voting centers for the 2020 presidential election. The move is part of a deal with the NBA players, who briefly halted their participation in the season-ending playoffs to protest racial injustice and police brutality. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports the latest arena to announce its plans is New York City's Barclays Center, home to the Brooklyn Nets.
Officials with the Barclays Center this week encouraged residents to come to the arena to cast their ballots in the November general election.
We think it's very important, particularly during this pandemic, to provide the residents of this city with as many safe and open voting centers as possible. And so we were happy to work with government officials to make that happen.
City officials who appeared with Abamandi called for more owners and cities to offer their spacious arenas as sites where people can safely vote while observing social distancing recommendations. In late May, demonstrators gathered outside the Barclays Center Arena to protest the death of George Floyd in the custody of Minneapolis police.
It is crucial that all of our arenas throughout the country
join the Barclay, join Madison Square Garden, and join other venues to say we will open our doors and ensure that people will be allowed to vote. This space is being transformed from a place where peaceful protests took place to a place where peaceful voting will continue.
The initiative was part of a deal negotiated with the players to end a boycott that shut down the NBA playoffs last week. The boycott spread quickly after the Milwaukee Bucks refused to take the court against the Orlando Magic in response to Jacob Blake's shooting in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Over the last few days in our home state of Wisconsin, we've seen the horrendous video of Jacob Blake being shot in the back 7 times by a police officer in Kenosha, and the additional shooting of protesters. Despite the overwhelming plea for change, there has been no action. So our focus today cannot be on basketball.
The unprecedented sport boycott in support of racial justice spread rapidly, shutting down almost all professional sports in America for several days. Several team owners supported their players, but not everyone was pleased. President Donald Trump tweeted, "People are tired of watching the highly political NBA. Basketball ratings are way down and they won't be coming back." In response to Trump's tweet, Milwaukee Bucks Kyle Korver said, "Life is not about ratings. Life is about standing for what is right." Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden expressed support for the Bucks players, saying in a tweet, "This moment demands moral leadership, and these players answered by standing up, speaking out, and using their platform for good." The season resumed after players, coaches, and league officials agreed on concrete action to promote voting and civic engagement and support police and criminal justice reform legislation. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, about one-third of the New York City's 240,000 small businesses may never reopen after the coronavirus pandemic is over. That's according to a report by the business group Partnership for New York City. Among them are small businesses owned by women. Nina Vishneva spoke with female entrepreneurs about their efforts to survive in this report narrated by Anna Rice.
Maya Aquaviva hasn't been here since her restaurant was forced to close in March due to the pandemic. For over 7 years, this has been like a second home to her.
My grandmother used to call her home Oda Sakhli. Oda House, a wooden house in the mountains.
People would come here in search of just that, the feel and taste of home. Oda House was the first restaurant in Manhattan to introduce New Yorkers to Georgian cuisine.
No one believed a Georgian restaurant would be a success. People don't know where Georgia is, and you think your khachapuri, chakapuli, and hinkali will sell?
The restaurant had survived many challenges, but the pandemic proved to be too tough to handle. Though the landlord gave Aquaviva a rent discount, working only for takeout wasn't enough. Oda House had to close, like many other restaurants in the area.
On this block alone, there are 8 vacant spaces. Who would want to go into restaurant business these days?
Oda House is not alone. About 3,000 small family-owned businesses reportedly have been forced to close since March, when New York City shut down because of the pandemic. Small business owners hoped they would survive the financial blow. Despite relief from a federal stimulus package, many did not survive. According to New York labor figures, small businesses employ more than 3 million people, about half of the city's workforce.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O.
Bank Street, the oldest children's bookstore in New York City, shut down due to the pandemic.
We've always been the place where kids could come after school and sit and do their homework, where toddlers could come on a Saturday morning and sit all together on the floor mats and listen to a story, where classes could come in and with their teachers and learn about what a bookstore is and why books are important.
For several generations of New Yorkers, this was a favorite go-to bookstore. All these years, the business has been managed by women. Store managers say employees could no longer engage young readers to sell children's books.
Now we're finding that customers who are ordering books from us to be shipped are saying, we don't live in the city, we left in the beginning of this, and we're not coming back.
Lalita Kamut hopes she won't have to leave. After 3 decades selling perfume in her Manhattan store, she says demand has dropped since the pandemic began.
What happened is, you know, the sale is really went down 90%. And so far, no one coming in. It's only like maybe one person a day, and sometimes nobody.
Kamut says without help from the city, her store probably won't make it. Meanwhile, she's hoping a safe and reliable vaccine will come in time to save New Yorkers and businesses like hers. For Nina Vishnyova in New York, NRI's VOA News.
With the end of the summer season in the United States, it's a time when many families are preparing for the new school year. But with the threat of COVID-19 delaying a return to campuses across the country, preparations this year include trying to make online learning work better for everyone. Matt Dibble has the story.
It's a new school year in the U.S., where the pandemic has closed many campuses and forced classes to continue online. At Oakland Technical High School in Oakland, California, students line up for books, and for some, computer equipment, like laptops, to use at home.
We have one at home. It's just really hard because we're splitting it between 3 of us.
The Oakland School District estimates that half of its roughly 50,000 students lack the technology they need for remote learning, a crisis affecting schools across the country.
So this is Chromebook, the charger.
Nonprofit groups have joined forces with Oakland schools to bridge a digital divide that has persisted for decades.
Yeah, sometimes the internet does go a little slow because we're all on the computers.
The coalition is raising funds for equipment such as laptops, internet service, and tech support for every student in need.
I think the internet connections to the world through the internet are almost as important as food in this day and age. The pandemic forced us to rethink how we do things and get it right.
This mother has 5 children studying at home.
I went to the schools and collect the Chromebook for every child.
When nearby Emerson Elementary closed its classrooms in March, second grade teacher Peter LaMotta worried about losing contact with his students.
Oh, it's so good to see so many names and kids. I miss you guys.
He launched Storytime with Mr. LaMotta on Facebook Live, a platform he hoped more families would be able to access using cell phones. As the new school year begins, LaMotta fears that some students who have not turned up are still lacking what they need to connect.
It's the difference between you having school and you not, or the quality of school that you have. Because you have sometimes students come in where they might not participate in a conversation, because every time they turn on their video or just even to try and speak, there's it glitches because it's not strong enough.
It's hard to believe that in the U.S., about 1 in 5 kids are struggling with either lack of access to a device or to Wi-Fi. We know from surveys of teachers around the country, they're very concerned about the learning loss their kids have already had, and now they're staring down another year of this.
So here is the hot spot.
And so the scramble to give out technology, adding new urgency to closing a digital divide. For VOA News, Matt Dibble, Oakland, California.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. You may continue by following us online at Facebook at VOA Asia, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And you'll find our full-length 25-minute programs at voanews.com. We thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.